So, Martin, we were talking about the colourings and food colourings and things like that. We know that there's a growing rate of infertility as well. I really wanted to keep on meeting more and more young people who are planning to have children and are having difficulty. And I know your daughter's very involved in preparing young couples for a healthy start for their children. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about her work, please?
Yes. Well, it's like the what we can do. Like, genes adapt themselves to the environment, and the gene expression adapts itself to the environment. So with the generations that have been, like, the last three generations that have been going to more processed food all the time, and all the restaurants with processed foods and preservatives and more salt and all that stuff in it, then the genes start to express themselves in a different way, and then we get all the problems with digestive problems and weight problems and health problems and cancers if we don't get enough of the good stuff in our body, because cancer is just a symptom of the cell division process is no longer able to stop, because the catalyst for the stopping of cell division is no longer available. So all these issues are related to what we eat and also what we breathe and what we drink. So because all the chemical, all the synthetics that can come through the water and through the breathing, mm-hmm. that like in a city, living in a city with all the bad stuff.
Chlorinated water and fluoride.
All makes, yeah. And fluoride and chlorine in the water. All these things play a role. But, of course, food we eat in big amounts as well. So then through food and through drinks, we can improve our gene expression. Because a child is born, because why we have these big explosions of unhealthy children, it's not because they exercise less than what our generation did. Because, like, I had a sister that was reading books all the time.
Mm.
And that's the same as sitting behind a computer.
Yeah.
So that's not the issue. It's what you eat. And like a child has the genes of the father and the mother. And of course, everybody talks about that all the time. But it's not, the child is not then the same as the body of the parents when they were born. The body of the child has the cell quality of the parents at the time of conception. So the parents, from their birth to their conceiving a child, if they have been eating fast food and no healthy vegetables, fruit and veggies and all those things, and have been on the using alcohol in big amounts and smoking and all those issues, then the cells of that child start at a lower point than they were. And if that child then gets children, and that child eats and lives in a not so healthy way, those children are lower again. So it's that stepwise lowering of the health of humans that's now happening in the Western world and in the upper class, the higher incomes in the developing countries, because you can see the same thing now in China and in India with the wealthy families, that the kids become overweight as well in that generation.
Yeah.
So what we now do is we start with cleaning the body, eating in the right way. So that's what my daughter, and that's the website, the Nutrient Practitioner.
She's called, the Nutrient Practitioner. What's her name again? Is it Maria?
Marika Rodenstein. Marika Rodenstein. That she then gets a program going, and you eliminate all the carbohydrates. So no grains in the food, and no sugars. And then you start, so it's all fruit and veggies. It's like a high protein diet.
Yeah.
Like meat. Meat is good, but everything is, of course, in normal amounts, not big amounts.
Yeah.
And then, like, quinoa, the grain from South America, is a non-carbohydrate grain that can be used. And, like, buckwheat can be used.
Yes.
But not like potatoes and sweet potatoes as well. But beans and peas in small amounts. So in that way, you start to feed the body with good minerals and proteins and a minimum amount of carbohydrates. And then the drinks, no alcohol, no drop of alcohol, and no processed milk. Raw milk is good, but processed milks are not good. And then you can use like goat's yogurt and sheep cheese. It's processed food, but it's good processed food.
Yeah, and this would all be organic, would it?
And that's organic is then the best direction as well.
Yeah.
And that's like for 4 weeks. And that's the first phase,
about water? Does she, stipulate what sort of water people should drink?
The water is the amount of negatives in the water is not that dominant as additives like the fuzzy drinks, etc.
Yeah.
So drinking normal water, and also no tea and coffee, because the caffeine...
Right. No stimulants.
No stimulants.
Mm.
And of course, if you have nice filtered water, pure water, rainwater, that's then better.
Yeah.
So in that process, you clean the body, and the body starts completely to adjust itself to that whole system. And then the cell quality becomes better of the whole body.
Yes.
And also the sperm of men becomes healthy again.
Yeah.
That's another thing on farms. Like on farms, when the male manager works the whole day with chemicals or sprays, etc., and sits on the tractor and sprays, then it's proven that the DNA in the sperm is damaged.
Yes.
And some people say if it's difficult to make a child, then to save up the sperm and then make the child. But that's the worst thing you can do, because then you have all the damaged DNA from, like, if you save it for a week or whatever, you get all the damaged DNA building up. So that's worse. So in that process of cleaning, then you get, in the end, a good fetus growing. And in that process, there are examples now that couples that have been on IVF and couldn't conceive with IVF, that they conceive with the with this biological way of cleaning the body and making the cell, the sperm and the eggs healthy and strong.
Yes, which has to be a preferable way to go, because IVF itself is using a lot of hormones and things that can lead to problems later.
Yeah, and as we now talk about that process, and then of course the child starts to grow, and during after conception, the whole food still stays in the right ballparks with high mineral density, etc., and no alcohol. And then, because each time, like as the fetus grows, different parts of the body are developed all the time, cells. And any time if there's a disruption, like when you drink alcohol at one stage, then that part of the body that's formed at that stage can then be affected.
Yes.
But it's a very good example, like from Ron and Beth Smith with the dairy cows, that with a very good conception, never barren cows, and always with the first time the bull is with the cow, the calf is starting.
Yes.
That then at the end of the, like towards calving, that's in South Gippsland, that a cold front comes from the ocean, and very cold, and animals drop their calves, and the calves die in the paddock.
Yeah.
But on Ron's property, cows don't drop their calf at the front, a cold front happens.
Yes.
They can wait 1-2 days and drop the calf, and the calf is healthy.
Yes.
So this whole biological system, we get the whole body in tune with nature again. So the hormones are all responding to the natural system, and we get a very good, healthy child developing and born.
Yeah, so I'm also thinking too about the alkaline acidity level too, because that can affect a lot of illnesses as well.
Yeah. So that food goes to the alkaline food, because also the vinegars, etc., are not in the food process. So we get an alkaline dominated, and also like with the buckwheat, etc., we get an alkaline dominated food system in our body, and that is then the positives.
Well, very good. No, thank you for that, because I don't know. We just seem to have, well, our daughters around the age, we have friends that are trying to have children and things like that, and it's a consistent problem of this problem of getting pregnant. So, you know, it's good to know someone like your daughter is out there and aware of supporting young couples. Yeah. All right, Martin. So getting back to this whole topic of healthy soils, healthy foods, when you are doing your talks and things like that, where do you find the biggest gaps in awareness are? Is there a common theme that comes through?
The biggest gaps in the awareness?
In knowledge, yeah, in knowledge.
In knowledge.
Because I was thinking with that talk at Maria, one of the girls was, she was an organic farmer, but she'd never really connected. You drew the three circles with the conventional and the organic, and then you drew the biological circle in between. She'd never really connected that it was the biology that was going to do the work for her with the organic.
Yep.
She'd been
yep.
strictly doing organic farming with inputs and things that hadn't connected with the biology, and that quite surprised me. But I was just wondering if you come across this sort of, whether there is any common comments that surprise you, or
that's the general theme of farming, that like it's all, everything is like boxed, pigeonholed in different groups, and then you just get a label that this is organic without knowing, and nobody talks about it further to see the whole active biology going. It's only those managers that have like the biosensitivity that can sense that biology, and by sensing it, they see it happening.
Yes.
But if you don't have that sensing ability, then you basically don't know what you're doing. And then, like the lady you talk about, if you then give like information to point them to what they have to look for, then suddenly the whole world goes open, because suddenly they see the things that you can see, and you dig up the soil and you look for the worms and as a symbol of the biological activity and the denser root systems. And the plants that are not attacked by diseases if the soil is healthy, and all those different things start to talk. But the biggest issue is that for the newcomers is always, and I had that a couple of days ago also with like a person that was working in a wholesale retail chemical company, fertilizer chemicals, etc.
Yep.
But he has a farm himself where he does the biological stuff because he sees it working. and now he's still working for the company.
Yes.
And he's, for his livelihood, he has to sell the stuff.
Yes.
But he says now it's more important for him to tell the truth to the farmers and to try things.
That's great.
And he says he gets good feedback there. But to me, he says, I have to know the numbers. I have to know the numbers. Where can I find numbers that this is good and what is working? And that's the doctrine, the paradigm that we have been brought up to in the schools, and increasingly in the universities today as well. Because students that go to university to learn agricultural science, like they have to work so many hours a week to get the money to keep studying.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
And they don't want to lose any time, so they say more and more yes to the professor and the lecturer, to not having to fail or do something again. And I was talking to a professor this afternoon, an emeritus professor, and he says the current generation is less critical, less questioning than the generations like 20 years ago, 40 years ago. And so in the whole agricultural science, all this. And that's a big worry for me for the future, because the whole pressure from the top will be coming from universities, from educated people that are still educated in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and they do say that there's lack of biological study in the agricultural courses too.
Yeah.
which is what we're talking about is the basis for what you really need to understand.
Yeah, because it's all specialized. It's all specialized in physical and chemical issues and mechanical mechanical solutions, physical solutions, chemical, and you see the results of those solutions very quickly because it works very good in the first few years, but then it starts to break down because the biology doesn't accept that way of doing it. But then another mechanical solution is come up, a chemical solution is made to solve that problem. So that, and that's what we talk about then with solving symptoms of problems rather than the cause of problems. And the cause is always associated with biology because we work with biological systems, living organisms.
Yes, exactly. Now, Martin, someone else has joined in on the call. I'm going to invite whoever it is to push star 7 and say hello to us. And if you've got a question, now's your time. So if you'd like to push star 7 and join us. And Michael, how are you going there?
Oh, pretty good, thanks. Pretty good. I'm listening intently.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Now, we have someone else who's joined us who is online now.
Yes, John Smythe. How are you, Helen?
Oh, hi, John. How are you?
Not too bad in Port Hedland at the moment.
I was just going to ask, are you in our state or not? Okay, so you've just joined us, haven't you?
Yeah.
Anything particular that you would like to ask Martin?
Oh, I just noticed over in the west here, Martin, there's been a bit of a headline on a spill of GM seed down there, Perth, somewhere, and the government, I guess the government department seemed to have brushed it under the carpet fairly quickly and put it as nonchalant sort of an exercise. So much for seed segregation.
Yeah, and like that's the issue I was talking about to the panels in New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia when the moratorium was to be finished. The panels were like reporting in November 2007 or 2008. It was 2007, I think. And like the situation in Canada was already written in scientific papers by an agronomist in Canada that it's impossible to segregate canola. And it was not necessarily the wind that would blow the canola in different paddocks. Well, and of course that happened with Steve Marsh in Western Australia as well, coaching up where a court case will now happen. But also lots of spillage. And in the breeding programs, they mix the wrong bags together and you get GM in the system, which happened like with GM rice in the United States. With GM rice, it was not released officially, but breeders the science world was working with GM rice and they got contamination. And now, there was a court case against the farmers, had a court case against the originator of the GM rice. And that was settled for $750 million that the company had to pay the affected rice farmers.
Yeah.
And those warnings have been around all the time, but there seems to be a strategy by the companies and our regulator is a willing participant in that to force the GM into the world that no one can go back.
Mm.
And they do that with, you have a choice, non-GM or GM. But that choice can't happen because, this one, the spilling of the truck. And, when I first heard that, and that was in Williams on the highway to Albany, Perth, Albany. And, when I was in Western Australia the last time, that shire had a meeting about voting to remain a GM-free shire. And I then had a phone conference with the shire, the council meeting, and they approved that. So in that council or shire, whatever you call it in Western Australia, they are non-GM growers, and they just want to be non-GM and not organic. And now they will have then if something happens, if the GM canola starts to grow on that roadside because there was a big spill, then they can get contamination and they lose their market to Japan.
And then we can
think, well, was that truck by accident in that shire that had nominated itself as against GM and all the growers having a market with Japan with non-GM, was that by accident in that Shire, that accident of spillage? Or is
it
organized?
Yep. Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from.
And that's the power, and that's the power of our current industries, that they can see what they can lose if they can't do their game, so they try to obstruct. And the farming community is at the end of the stick, and they cop everything. And like me, I was talking with Stephen Marsh at the Organic Expo in Sydney, and he is then suing his neighbor, and they went to primary school together and the tennis club or whatever. And so in that whole industry, and like I try to, and many of us, the critical GM, anti-GM thinkers, we were all foreshadowing that, and we wanted, at the release of GM canola, we wanted then the companies to be responsible for any damage. But the whole government and the regulators, they said no, the farmers have free choice, and then the normal law will protect them. But now that normal law comes down to neighbors fighting each other in the court, and that's completely irresponsible. That's criminal that our governments let that happen.
Totally fractures the community while doing
that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the powers.
John, is it?
Yeah.
It's Michael here. I'm just another member. I just on that point that Martin just made about the free choice, that's what the promulgators of GM say. Oh, it's a free world, free choice. So farmers have the free choice to grow GM whatever, whether it's canola, rice, wheat, whatever it might be. So it's their right because they've got free choice. However, the payment of that free choice, there's nothing free, because as soon as they exercise that right of free choice to grow a GM, that automatically takes away the free choice of someone not to grow GM because of the market contamination. So I'm just thinking, I'm not in a position to do anything about it, but the government is actually, it's remiss of the parts of the government to keep the free choice really free for everyone.
Yeah, exactly, Michael.
That's
exactly the point. And like what you said is absolutely right, because now the costs of the GM is borne by the non-GM farmers, because they have to prove that their seed is non-GM.
That's right.
Mm. And they have to pay if they're growing it too.
Yes.
Yeah, so they are settled with costs rather than the GM settled with costs.
Mm.
The thing is too that Australia, I think that Australia has been targeted by these overseas companies and countries in the fact that there's a lot of companies and countries overseas which see Australia as a threat, because really we were sitting pretty, completely surrounded by water. The only way it could get contaminated is through a ship coming in, and if things were done correctly, it just wouldn't have happened, or very minute risk.
Yep.
Australia was sitting pretty to be a GM-free country in the world, and my personal thought is, well, why don't we sit on that? Why didn't the government sit on that? And if GM is proven to be safe in the next 50 or 100 years, if it was, well, then we can join on the bandwagon when we have to feed the world that way, using their terms. I don't agree with their terms and theories, but, you know, why did we have to jump in now? Because we had a little market all to ourselves if we had kept GM free, because of our geographical position. And
exactly.
The governments have just jumped in, and, well, I think they've been conned into jumping in because they didn't want us to be outside the square. And,
that happened like with GM wheat. With the GM wheat, like in 2004, North America, Canada and the United States, they stopped all the research, all the work on GM wheat breeding, etc., because they got the message from the consumer they didn't want GM in their bread. So then those companies started to pressure here, and then universities, academics, and like grain companies, like in Western Australia for salinity research, they started to play then with GM wheat. And now we had field trials with GM wheat starting, while the rest of the world doesn't do it. And and I was always asking, talking about the easy contamination in the laboratory and in the breeding world, and then you get slippage of GM in our standard crops, and then you get the whole world looking at us with contaminated wheat.
Yeah.
Who pays for that?
You know, Martin, this has sadly been facilitated by an organisation that most farmers used to believe were above any corruption or infiltration of any kind.
Yeah.
And it started quite a while ago, as you well know, with the CSIRO. They've basically been the facilitators or the non-sayers of it, and they come out and make statements from time to time. I know they did it with the dairy industry, saying that the GM contamination couldn't cross over, so everything was all right. And a CSIRO spokesman said that the dairy industry, to keep up and keep being able to feed the world, they still propagate this great fallacy about not being able to feed the world without GM.
Yeah, because that was after the destruction of the GM wheat crop in Canberra. The CSIRO head was on television, and he said again, oh, we need the GM wheat to feed the world and to get better quality grain.
Yeah.
And like for Western Australia, like with the GM drought tolerant wheat, and also in South Australia with the GMs, also for acidity tolerance and salt tolerance and drought tolerance, all these issues, and food quality, like in our biological farming, we get already higher yields, better drought tolerant, better saline tolerant, because we change the soils, than they can ever get with those tolerant varieties, GM tolerant varieties. And then the farmers have to pay a higher price for the seed because it has patents in it, and they don't get the same yield as the biological farming can get from a healthy soil with our current varieties.
That's
now, Martin, I'm going to have to stop you there. It's a really good point to stop on, because it's biological farming that will actually feed the world and also look after the farmer's hip pocket, because they will not be spending out on buying these company seeds and being under their control. So I think the more that we can get the message out that it's biological farming that's going to lead the way for our future, the better it'll be. So I'm going to have to end the call here, but I really thank both you and John Michael for joining in the conversation, and Martin, for you constantly going and speaking out. And I know I saw you on Landline on this very point too, and I think, you know, we've got a lot to thank anyone who's speaking out, and especially your strong stand and your commitment to, you know, the future of our world. And I'd like to thank everyone who's on the call listening later, and keep up the good work, and we'll talk again soon. So is there any one little point that someone wants to quickly make?
Yeah, I can, like after Landline about GM, in the same week I had interviews with Catalyst, ABC Catalyst.
Yes.
And next Thursday, the 15th of September, will be Catalyst. The whole program of Catalyst will be on GM.
Mm-hmm.
And I will talk there again about the critical against GM questions.
Great. Good on you, Martin. Oh, thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good night to everyone.
Okay.
And thank you.
Yep. Okay, bye.
Good night. And
good
thank
night.
You. Thank you, Martin, and thank you, Helen. And
Michael.
And nice hearing you, John. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.